Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's November 19th. Currently 35 degrees under cloudy skies here in Old Town Park City, Heber City Airport reporting 38 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Wednesday. We're looking at mostly cloudy skies as we go throughout the day. Temperatures climbing into the upper 40s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 50s there for us in the Heber Valley. We will have a chance of a couple of isolated showers potentially developing as we go throughout the day. Again, these will be isolated in nature, but there could be a couple of raindrops out there, so don't be too surprised by that. As we go into your forecast, heading into your Thursday, I think we'll see a better chance of precipitation moving back into the area. So we'll call for some scattered rain showers for us in the Heber Valley as we go throughout the day on Thursday with high temperatures in the upper 40s. Meanwhile, in Park City, we'll be talking about some scattered rain showers. There's the potential of a few snowflakes mixing in with some of those rain showers. I don't expect much of accumulation around the Park City area, but a little higher up in elevation up towards the mountain and above, we could see a slight dusting of snowfall with that as well. Otherwise, as we head into your Friday, we'll have a chance of some morning precipitation, rain and snow showers on your Friday morning, but we should dry out by Friday afternoon with a mixture of clouds and some sunshine. High temperatures only in the mid-40s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 40s for us in the Heber Valley. Once we get into the weekend, it's looking beautiful out there. Mostly sunny skies, chilly temperatures to start as we drop down into the 20s both Saturday and Sunday morning. We'll see those highs in the mid-40s for us in Park City on your Saturday afternoon. Highs around 50 in the Heber Valley for your Saturday afternoon. And by Sunday, high temperatures should climb into the upper 40s for us in Park City with highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley. As we kick off a holiday week, looks like it starts off on a quiet and dry note out there. Lots of sunshine for your Monday. Temperatures starting off in the 20s, highs in the upper 40s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley. And by next Tuesday, we're looking at partly sunny skies, temperatures in the 20s for morning lows, highs in the mid-40s in Park City, and highs in the upper 40s in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Wednesday. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Park City COO Deidre Walls. We'll be taking a look ahead at the coming season. Of course, that's been postponed due to warm temperatures. Find out how things are going. Park City Council member Bill Sirocco with a recap of last night's special city council meeting and election canvas. And Heber City Council member Scott Phillips will be recapping last night's meeting as well. Morning. Well, the Park City Council confirmed the results of November's election yesterday afternoon. Ryan Dickey is Park City mayor by a narrow margin. The results show Dickey won the mayoral race by just 7 votes, with 1,706 compared to Jack Rubin's 1,699. That margin is narrow enough for Rubin to request a recount within 3 days. City Recorder Michelle Kellogg told the City Council she had not received a request as of the certification. Afterward, Rubin said he didn't have a comment. Dickey told KPCW the day prior that he and his campaign fully respect Rubin's decision either way, saying they remain extremely confident in the accuracy, the count, and the professionalism of the Summit County's clerk office. Summit County Clerk E. Furs has 1 week to finish a recount if Rubin should request it. Last week's primary results had the candidates 11 votes apart. Since then, Furs's office counted 14 additional Park City ballots with signatures that initially couldn't be verified. That process is known as curing. Only one Park City voter's ballot was left uncured. The deadline for voters to cure was noon on Monday. First told KPCW the ballot was unsigned. In the race for the 2 city council seats, incumbent Tana Tolley and political newcomer Diogo Zagar prevailed with more than 2,000 votes each. Incumbent Jeremy Rubel will leave the county council come January, having garnered just over 1,500 votes. Well, opening day at Park City Mountain for the 2025 ski season was set for Friday at both Park City and the Canyons Village, but those warm temperatures have pushed that back. And in the studio with a look ahead, I have the COO of Park City Mountain, Deidre Walsh. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be here.
Yeah, so talk a little about how you prepare for early season snow and potential climate-related challenges. So walk us through how the mountain gets opened up every season. I mean, I'm guessing there's some sort of plan to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. I love always coming on the show, typically the week that we're going to open. Usually I like to have better news, but here we are in one of those years. So yeah, we obviously have a, you know, a big complex operation, and so we always build flexibility into our planning. Our snowmaking team spends, you know, hours throughout the summer making sure that we're prepared to fire up those guns when the temps permit, and we've been ready to go over the last several weeks. Unfortunately, just haven't gotten those temperatures. For your listeners, snowmaking is, you know, it's a science. So when you think about what the temperature is for ideal snowmaking, so that's a wet bulb temperature. It considers the humidity, the ambient temperature around that. We measure that at the base area, mid-mountain, and at the top of the mountain. So it gives you an idea that it can be totally different. On an even day, you can wake up in the morning at your house and it could be crisp and cold down here, but it might be actually warmer at the higher elevations, or sometimes that flips on its head a bit. So we've seen a bit of that this year, having a tough time really getting our snowmaking at those lower elevations. So we have our plan A, which consists of, out of Mountain Village, you know, we always aim to have Payday and First Time in Three Kings. So that gives us a great location for our terrain park guests that we know love to get out there right away, our beginners, and gives us access to lower Home Run. And then typically out of Canyons Village, we are focused on High Meadow, again, a great beginner terrain there, and Saddleback. And that's the ideal sort of situation. We're not there. So that was plan A. Now we'll look at plan B, and plan B is going to be dynamic. So we'll see, you know, where we have the terrain, when we have the terrain, but really focused on making sure we can lay down a great snow surface that's going to last us to the end of the season. Because these are the runs, as you know, that make it from the very beginning to the very end of the season.
Yeah. What is that perfect temperature?
Yeah, ideally it's about 28 degrees. Yeah. You can start making snow a little bit when it's warmer. It's not always the best product. It's maybe a shorter duration than you can run. So you can start a little bit warmer, 28 and below. I mean, ideal, you're at like 14, 15 degrees, and then you can just really pump out some of the snowmaking hours out there. And when we have those, we'll run, you know, consecutively 24 hours for as many hours as we can in an area until we're ready to pull off of that. So overnight is what we aim for at this time of year, but like you know, not happening right now.
Yeah, so how long would it take? I mean, if we did get those temperatures, which certainly aren't in the forecast the next week.
Yeah, maybe the way to think about it is the amount of snow that we need through our snowmaking, and then anything that Mother Nature can do on top of it is obviously incredible as well. But to give maybe a reference point to this same time last year, we had about 200 acre feet of snow. That was enough for us to get to the plan A package. Right now, we're only at about, in total, about 44 acre feet of snow. So 1 acre foot of snow is the amount that, if you look at a football field from goal line to goal line, and then 1 inch deep. Now, we try to aim for about 18 inches, you know, and we try to get wall to wall on that. So I would say right now it's maybe not a matter of, 200 acres gets us our opening package for sure. But we'll open earlier if we feel like, you know, we've got something out there that guests will enjoy. We know with the holidays coming up that lots of people are coming in town.
Yeah. So why would it, I mean, why do you look for that route down on the Park City side, but not necessarily over on the Canyon side?
What we can benefit from out of the canyon side is actually that terrain at High Meadow and Saddleback, because it's at the higher elevation, it's a great spot. And then we know too that because we have the gondola access this year with Sunrise, we've got Red Pine Gondola, we know that we can get guests up to that area. They don't have to ski back down from there. They can download, which is great. And it's and that also gives folks access to our next move, which is down Chicane to Tombstone. And that progression really works out great. And you know, Docks is always in that plan too. But you know, early on, that mid-mountain location at Canyons Village makes the most sense.
All right. So you don't have that download capacity on the Park City side of things?
Correct, because we don't have gondolas.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yet. Is that what you said?
No, I didn't say that. But if you've got an idea, there you go.
let's see, as we head into winter, maybe, I mean, what are you most excited about for? I mean, I guess once we get the snow.
Yeah, so much to be excited for. And I know I've talked about it on the radio before, and certainly with our employees who ask about this, is the Sunrise Gondola, which will be out of Canyons Village. So just for your listeners, we replaced that this summer. It was actually a two-summer project. We have that prepared to open when we open out of Canyons Village. I actually just rode that for the first time this past week, and it was incredible. It's a six-minute ride, incredibly smooth. And, you know, I'm always reminded, I've been here in this community for 20 years, and the vantage points that you can gain on a new lift, so skiing and riding Canyons Village for many, many years, but going up in this new location, similar to what was there before, but then coming back down on a gondola, you just haven't seen that before. So really excited for that overall. And not just the gondola itself, but we were able to look at that project and improve our beginner terrain. So have a whole new area we're calling Moose Camp that is really focused on our beginners that are part of our incredible ski and ride program. And then we also improved the dining area for our ski and ride school, our younger students that come in this really innovative and creative space for them to come and take their breaks. So that whole space is going to feel really different this season. So I'm really excited for that. I'm excited for, while a small improvement, the Summit House, which has, you know, been around for a while at the top of the Bonanza Lift. We had a designer from HGTV who lives here in Park City, who loves Park City Mountain, is a snowboarder, brings her family here. She came up and she did a nice refresh for us there, worked directly with our team. So I went and saw that a couple weeks ago. It looks great. So excited for that. Excited for a lot of things. Those are probably a couple of the highlights right now.
Yeah, so that new Sunrise, is it 10 passenger?
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it pops out, I mean, going up the mountain, where are you going to land?
Yep, so it's the base terminal is right outside of the Pendry Hotel, Dos Olas. So it's the same location as where Sunrise was before, just a little bit lower down. And then it pops you out right next to where Red Pine Lodge is and across from Saddleback and our High Meadow lifts. So guests will be able to, you know, get out of the gondola, choose to go into the lodge. They can then move over to some beginner space if they want, or they can shoot right down Chicane when we have that open and get down to Tombstone really quickly.
All right. Well, with lots of improvements there on the Canyons Village side of resort with the list, what about the Park City signs you had side? He had told us that the resort would be reapplying to replace the Eagle and Silverlow chairlifts. So when should we expect that to happen?
Yeah, we've been able to, like you said, do a lot of great investments over the last few years. The lifts with Sunrise and an LIP application through to the county for a cabriolet replacement. There's the parking garage as well that's through our developer. Doing snowmaking across the resort, we always have improvements when it comes to that. And on Silverlow and Eagle, I don't have a specific update for you today other than to say we remain committed to both of those lifts coming online at the resort. You know, Silverlow is certainly an area that we know is incredibly popular. It's the heart of that side of the mountain. So I hope to have news for you on that soon. But, you know, right now we're continuing to focus on when we can resubmit those and what those applications look like.
Yeah. I mean, is the thinking that you're just going to go through how you would normally go through with a CUP, or are you going to try and bring those back under the development agreement? Kind of allowed a fast track.
Yeah, the way that the development agreement works for Park City Mountain is that there are improvements that are allowed to be done through an administrative review. That's part of kind of the core elements of what is part of the development agreement, and we feel really confident that Silverlow certainly would fit into that category, as it would be replacing, you know, like for like, essentially, obviously a six pack to an eight pack, but along the same corridor. So I think that's our focus for Silverlow, and when we are ready to share more information on that, I will definitely be doing that with you.
Okay. What about the two levels of the parking garage? Are those ready to be used?
Yeah, I just toured that last week as well, and it looks really good. Again, for your listeners, that's a project that's from our developer, TCFC. They're working closely with the county on when that'll come online, when they get the certificate of occupancy. But it looks really good. They didn't quite have the striping down on the stalls yet, but essentially, I would say 90% there. They were finishing up the touches on some lights there. There's some painting to do, but it looks really good, and I know it'll be transformational. And really pleased that this upcoming season, free parking remains in that area. So you'll have the two levels of the parking garage. There'll be some space surrounding the parking garage, similar to what we did last year. And then those upper lots that are on the way up to the Pendry area, those will also be available for parking. One of those lots have been paid for many, many many years, one of those will remain paid. Otherwise, it'll be a free parking experience out of Canyons Village.
All right. And any changes to the parking situation on the Park City side?
Yeah, we've got a slight change. And I know we talk often about listening to our community and, you know, ways that we can improve the experience from start to end of the day. One of the things I heard personally was, you know, I'm can't always find a carpool, and I'd love to sometimes just take a run at lunch. So we have changed that reservations are only needed up until noon, and after noon, you can come at any time, and if there's a parking stall available, it's yours on the surface lots. That's a change from 1 o'clock. So an hour difference. I hope for people that are listening, you can get stoked if that lunch hour opened up a little bit more for you from that change. Otherwise, the parking and reservations will remain the same out of Mountain Village.
All right. You still do need a reservation. You can't just show
correct.
Up. Afternoon?
Yeah. Afternoon, yes.
12 noon, you can just show up. No reservation needed.
Now you're making me second guess that. Yeah.
Okay. Because you don't need a reservation after 1 o'clock.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
So the reservation would be required between 9 and noon.
Correct.
All right. Let's move just real quick about the redevelopment of the base parking lots. I mean, we haven't, again, heard anything since Peg walked away with this.
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. I know that it's an interest for certainly the resort, I think for our employees and the community as well. I don't have any updates on this, you know, right now. We'll continue to engage with the community and expect a lot of conversations and dialogue about ultimately, you know, what everyone would like to see there, what we think will be beneficial, certainly to the resort operations, but also to the community. So when we're ready for those conversations, we'll certainly have those. And we know that that's an important development opportunity for everyone, but not something right now that I have information to share on.
All right. And any news with regard to the Town Lift Plaza and what that might look like?
Yep, business as usual as far as Town Lift Plaza is considered. Town Lift, I know typically we like to know when that's going to open, so we'll see how the snow goes, but we usually shoot for the lift itself to open kind of in that first, second week of December, so that'll still be our aim. But ticket window will operate as normal. The way that our guests arrive and queue in the plaza will remain the same as it has in previous years.
Yeah, and with the Silver Star chairlift too, is there a priority to get that open?
Yeah, Silver Star, so two things on that. We always aim to have Silver Star open on or before Christmas. We know it's an important portal overall. With many of our lifts, if conditions allow that we can open that earlier, we certainly will shoot to do that. In fact, I think last year we got it open as soon as we possibly could. The other thing about Silver Star is I was so pleased to work with the HOA and the team over there for us to pull forward an agreement for the continued operation of that lift, and we did that, so we have another 10-year agreement there, and they were just such a pleasure to work with and so glad to partner with them and ensure that the lift and those that live there and come to visit and stay near Silver Star can count on that for the operations.
All right, and then the Olympic preparations, again, clock's ticking.
Clock's ticking. In fact, I was just looking, you may know that there's some people that'll head off to Cortina in February as part of an official observer program. So certainly myself and Deer Valley and Snow Basin, Ski Utah are all excited to go and really look at the Olympics through the lens of a venue. So we'll go there and we'll be able to really talk directly with those that are implementing the Olympics, be able to observe it from a spectator standpoint and from a community standpoint. I know others from the community are going. There's a couple different time periods where you go depending on what you want to see. So I'm excited for that and to come back and, you know, have some additional ideas for all of us to share, both from a venue standpoint, but also from a community standpoint, and continue to work on the plan for Park City Mountain.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. The Olympic venues would be at base of Park City. Are we talking about something that happening at Canyons as well?
I think we're looking at overall, you know, we've got a big resort and looking at where all the opportunities are. One of the things that I know for sure with the Olympics is that the progression in the sport is something that we want to keep our eyes on for the future. So making sure that we have a world-class venue that really matches the need of the athletes and showcases Park City Mountain Resort and the Olympics in the best light possible. So that's the way we're looking at it for our venues for 34.
All right, uphill access, is that going to happen once we get snow?
Yes, we are pleased to once again continue our uphill access. Reminder that that is just out of Mountain Village. Hopefully folks have the text string or you can check on social. When we actually open that up, it's really important for us to maintain the most safe environment we can for uphill skiers and for our employees. So that means that early season when we have snowmaking still happening, we have grooming that's happening around the clock. We have patrollers that are out there as well that we want to ensure that that nobody's out on the terrain that we allow for uphill, creating a situation that's unsafe for everybody. So we just ask, let's make sure that folks are informed on when we open. And then we added some new signage because we know we've heard from that community. It would be helpful just a little bit more signage to make sure everyone stays on the right trails. We've done that and look forward to welcoming back uphillers when the time is right.
All right. Finally, I just wanted to ask you, many Epic Pass holders offered credits or discounts as a goodwill gesture after last season. Are there any deadlines or limitations on how pass holders can redeem those?
You know, I'd have to double check on the fine print on that. Was very happy to be able to make that offer based on last year's early season experience. And I can get back to you on the fine print if there's a time stamp on that.
Okay. Deidre, anything else you wanted to mention?
I think the last thing that I'll mention is just excited for the traditions that we always bring to life at Park City Mountain. I won't be on between now and some of these events. So we've got the Canyons Village tree lighting ceremony. That's on November 28th. A great opportunity to come out and enjoy it with your friends and family. We have Santa's Riding Downtown Lift, one of my very favorites. We're looking forward to that on December 20th, followed by the Torchlight Parade on December 24th. And just last words is thank you to all the employees that make Park City Mountain such an incredible place to come live, work, and play at, and all their efforts to get this mountain open for this winter.
Okay, staffing's looking good?
Looking great.
Okay, Deidre, thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Deidre Walsh is the COO and Vice President of Park City Mountain Resort. Well, the Park City Council last night certified the November election. In the studio with a recap of that and other city business, Council Member Bill Sirocco. Good morning, Bill. Good to see you.
Good morning, Leslie. The calendar says mid-November, but I woke up with butterflies this morning anticipating this interview.
Oh. Well, it'll be simple enough.
There we go.
So with the election canvas and with the loss now of Council Member Jeremy Rubel going into the new year, talk to me a little about that. You guys had a voting block, it appeared. You, Jeremy, if you could get Ed to come along, you could either decide for something or against something with that three-person vote. Do you still have that, do you feel like?
I don't think I felt like we had that to begin with. I think the actual numbers showed that there were only on 6% of the occasions did the three of us vote the same way. I've batted, you know, heads with Jeremy. I've batted heads with Ed. I'm there as an independent person trying to represent every constituent here in Park City. So I know there was that perception, but perception does not equal reality.
All right. 6%. Where'd you figure that out with?
That was some work that Councilman Rubel did as that, you know, sort of narrative was floated during the campaign. So he went back and looked at the record, and those were the numbers that he calculated.
All right. Well, we'll get back to that because that's towards more of the interview. But given the support Jack Rubin had from the Park City Heights neighborhood, was this a race about open space in your mind?
I mean, yeah, I think that's always one of the issues here in Park City, right? It had been for a long time with Bonanza Flat, had been with Treasure Hill. I don't think if you were advocating for Treasure Hill to be developed in the mid-2010s that you would have been elected to citywide office. There was pretty strong support in the community for open space, and Jack's campaign spoke to that, and the people made their judgment based on that.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because that was brought up towards the in the meeting. You, Jeremy Rubel, and Ed Parisian said that you want to see the Clark Ranch conservation easement back on the agenda. It is scheduled for December 18th. So is that soon enough?
Well, considering that we bought Clark Ranch in 2014 or 2015, I would say no, that's not soon enough. I think the meeting 2 weeks ago, even the mayor had had said that she had thought that this was done already prior to her becoming mayor. So, you know, we want to get it done as quickly as possible. We know it's a priority for the community. You know, the direction was pretty clear that Clark Ranch, the majority, 334 of the 344 acres of Clark Ranch were to be put under a conservation easement.
Yeah. So how do you lean on that? You're good with the pulling the 10 acres out for development and including that 5-acre buffer or no?
Well, I'd say I had some different ideas strategically on Clark Ranch. I was told over and over again that there was a recommendation made, you know, by the committee that was stood up back in 2015, COSAC. Mm-hmm. And, if you look at their work, it says up to 10 acres for municipal use. And they identified an area known as Steve Point, which was the northernmost portion of the west side of Clark Ranch. There was a map drawn which had a survey line, which maybe was, I think, about 10.8 or 10.9 acres. I kind of attribute that to the, you know, just drawing a line on a map issue. But the intent was for there to be 10 acres to be set aside for municipal use.
And so are you good with putting affordable housing on that 10 acres?
Yeah, if it works.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't it?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, everything is a function of how much does it cost to do, right? We also have some steep slope issues on that property. There was some initial work done in 2021, some land surveying work, which, you know, didn't really say that property was an easy build site. The city went back to the drawing board, had, you know, another round of work done, an RFP done 2023 with Stereotomic. And, they came back and said, yeah, we think you can do this, right? But there's still a lot of, even at that point, there's still a lot of information that needs to be discovered and realized before you can understand whether it's a feasible project. And feasible is both from a technological standpoint, engineering standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint, right? It's not, we don't have an unlimited budget for workforce housing.
Yeah. So have you worked out then the legal challenges about this with, because it sounds like the Alexander Company think they have 15 acres to work with.
Well, you know, I can't really speak to any of the legal issues. I'd have to refer to Margaret Plain, the city attorney. We are working diligently with the Alexander Company in good faith, as we always have. And, if the project works, then the project will work. And, you know, we haven't gotten to that point where we can make that determination yet.
Yeah, you mentioned that you had different ideas for Clark Ranch. What were those?
Well, as I said before, that site that we're looking at right now is very challenging, right? There's a significant portion of the property is covered by steep slopes, 20% or greater, I think about 80% of the property, right? So that makes it a very challenging build, as anyone knows. I had a thought that if we have 344 acres and up to 10 acres could be used for affordable housing, why not use the best 10 acres, right? And best 10 acres from a most feasible standpoint, from an engineering and a construction standpoint. If you go to the top of Park City Heights neighborhood and you look at the cut and fill that needs to be done to put the foundations in there for those homes, you know, it's pretty eye-opening, right? So if we're trying to build affordable housing, to me, and, you know, I approach this from the standpoint of strategy and logic, I would want the easiest, least expensive spot to build those properties on.
Okay, and where's that? Not on the west side, is that what you're saying?
It's 344 acres. I think anybody could look at that property and figure out, like, well, maybe there's a location that has, an easier build site. But, you know, I was constantly reminded by my colleagues on council that COSAC made a recommendation, and their recommendation was Steve Point, and we had to abide by that. But their recommendation also was up to 10 acres, so.
Yeah, and they're an advisory board.
Agree. I don't disagree with that opinion.
Yeah. Back to the election. Any idea when the council will accept applications now for Ryan's vacant city council seat?
I'm trying to think back, Leslie, back to the 2021 election when Nan was elected mayor. She vacated a seat, and there was an open application process. And I actually did participate in that process back then. I think it was in January. We may open applications. I don't know. We may open applications before the end of the year, but that process happens, that deliberation and review happens in January.
All right. Have you seen any of the candidates moving forward for city manager at this point?
No, we haven't yet. I'm curious. I'm excited. You know, Matt was did a tremendous job. He was great for Park City. I'm sad to see him go. I'm not surprised. He got an amazing opportunity, and I'm very happy for him. You know, but now we need to look to the future, and I'm excited for when we get to start seeing some candidates.
Okay. Let's move on to the Deer Valley Resort Partnership. The council approved this with Deer Valley yesterday for a transportation project and off-site parking in the 248 corridor. Do we know where that parking would go at this point?
Well, we're looking at a number of sites, Leslie. We're looking at city-owned parcels, city leaseholds that we have. Richardson Flat is a city leasehold. We've got, just under 75 years left on that lease. And as you know, we do have 750 parking spots out there already. You know, so that seems like it could be a location. And sorry, that was my daughter calling.
Oh, sorry.
I apologize for that. So, that work is still ongoing. We're having regular meetings with Deer Valley. We're having regular meetings with our staff, with UDOT. UDOT's doing a transportation study, a corridor study in that Highway 40 area. So there's a lot of moving parts. They're all starting to slowly, combine.
Yeah. So again, the city would own the facility that would be built under this partnership. And as you mentioned, kind of a leasehold with Richardson Flat, we got a 90 plus years left, I think, on that lease. Is that good enough?
Yeah. Yes, I would think so. And you know, it's a lease. So leases can be extended. There's all sorts of flexibility around that.
All right. Both parties would pitch in up to $15 million. Deer Valley's Todd Bennett said the funds could go to affordable housing as well. So do you want housing part of this transportation?
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, I think the transportation need is significant, and although $30 million sounds like a lot of money, when you start, building parking and investing in a transportation infrastructure that you would need, we'd want to make it super convenient. We want to make it compelling for people, so we'd have to have some services there alongside with the parking. If there were money left over, sure. But we also have a housing fund where we have some money, not a lot. We have some money pledged to the Holiday Village Parkside Apartments, redevelopment of that parcel, which I would really love to see get going. And if it requires a little bit more help from the city, I'd be willing to consider that.
Okay. So the city is required to match that $15 million or up to whatever Deer Valley spends?
Yes.
Okay. And that's just because, why do we have to put money up?
You know, what I would say is that deal was struck before I got on council, so I couldn't speak precisely to the logic behind that, but that was the deal that was made. And, I'm here. We're going to try to make the best of that deal, and if we can make a significant investment. And I think the city had always contemplated making an investment in infrastructure for transportation, right? So if that happens to be in partnership with Deer Valley, one plus one might equal three.
So with the redevelopment of Snow Park, which will not add any new parking spaces, despite all of the new commercial and hotel rooms being built, that's what is triggering this requirement?
Yeah, this deal was struck coming out of the negotiation over the vacation of the right-of-way at Deer Valley. That process took a long time. There was significant community feedback on that. There was a group that was organized called Protect the Loop that did a, really good job of working hard to not just say no, but to actually offer some different possibilities. Eventually, Deer Valley evolved and saw that they could do a plan that really made the Protect the Loop people, it moved a good way towards what they were advocating for. No one gets 100% of what they want all the time, but I think it was a reasonable, outcome.
All right. So what's the timeline on this? Do we need permits to make this transportation facility happen? I mean, does it have to go through the entire planning process?
Yeah, it's we're looking at areas inside of Park City, so it would be subject to Park City Planning Commission jurisdiction. There are a number of things in the air, so it's going to be a function also of when Deer Valley begins the construction on Snow Park. We did ask that question last night. They're hopeful to get started as soon as possible, but as Todd Bennett indicated, they have a little project going on the other side, which is taking up a lot of their bandwidth. And, I'm hopeful that they get started sooner or later. I know for certain they're going to want to get that done before 2034, and I'm excited for it to move forward.
All right. Now, could High Valley Transit use the facility or install a stop as well there?
Yeah, I mean, I think any transit operator is going to be involved in the conversation, and that the workings of whatever that transit network's going to look like when that facility, the remote parking facility, is constructed, is TBD. But we've tried to work in good partnership with High Valley. High Valley utilizes our infrastructure here in town. High Valley has in the last year or two launched some service down into Wasatch. And I don't know what the future of that is. But yeah, we look forward to working with all the providers, and hopefully UTA will participate and help bring people up from the valley.
All right, let's move on to the child care scholarships. The council talked about adjusting some of the requirements to get a child care scholarship. One of the requirements would be to remove the income restriction. So do you support that, or a version of kind of switching up which area meeting income folks qualify?
So that conversation around the income restriction, really what the math is, the recommendation is up to 10% of your income can go towards child care. And if you looked at the graph of the incomes, up around $200,000, so about 10% of that would be $20,000. That was just about what a 12-month tuition rate would be. So you would lose, like, at that point, the income restraint, you don't have access to a child care benefit. So it sounds like a big change, but it really isn't. It makes a little bit of difference, sort of in that middle, missing middle, as we refer to it in housing, sort of the graph, and it allows us to direct a little bit more funding to the lower end of the graph as well.
So does the city have enough money to expand which families qualify for the scholarships?
That was part of the conversation last night, and the council is committed to working hard with our budget staff to, the most important before we start expanding is to make sure that we have a permanent, funding source for this plan, right? So that's number one. And as we figure that out, we're going to look to make sure that, it funds what the council would like to do.
Yeah, and as you just said, I mean, the program did start with kind of a one-time funding allocation.
Yep.
Should it become a permanent fixture in the budget?
So from what we've seen so far, the program's been pretty successful. And for me, the number one metric on that is the large increase in families utilizing the state benefit through DWS. So we put in place this child care scholarship program, but one of the stipulations was that you needed to exhaust your benefit ability with DWS at the state level. So we had at one point, I think we had over 20 families getting DWS money, up from one, right? So we're leveraging into the system, and we're incentivizing people to take advantage of every part of the system. And so to me, that makes sense. And if you are, if you allow a parent to be able to work, we do have a tremendous, issue with workforce in the community, and it's only going to get more difficult as, that little operation over at Deer Valley East gets going. So, yeah, I mean, from what I see right now, it looks like the program's been pretty successful, and I'd be keen to continue it as long as the results keep proving out the way they have.
Okay. Finally, just wanted to ask you, the city delayed discussion of the Bonanza Park rezone. Do you know when that comes back to council? And what will it be before the end of the year, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know when that comes back to council. I believe it was to a date uncertain. So I can't speculate on the calendar.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anything else, Bill?
No, nothing else today,
All
Leslie.
Right. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill Sirocco, a member of the Park City Council. Well, another late night meeting. The Heber City Council not adjourning until after 11 o'clock last night. In the studio with a recap of the meeting, Councilmember Scott Phillips. Good morning, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Hey, first, let's just talk about the election. With about a 260-vote lead, incumbent Heidi Franco goes on to serve another 4 years mm-hmm. as mayor. How did you read those results? Was it a race about preservation versus development?
I'd say it does come down to that. But I think there was a lot of misleading information, flyers put out that I would say were less than truthful. That's very difficult to run against.
Yeah.
So
with your term wrapping up, do you have any goals? I mean, for the end of your term here, or?
We have two more meetings left. Last night would have been, three meetings left. Two more meetings in December. Just tying up some loose ends of things we've discussed for a long time, hopefully that we can get past. Some specific things last night, including the communications policy, has been high on my list. I really feel like, the city owes it to the citizens. The citizens can only give us as good information back as we give to them.
All right. That's
key.
I'm going to get to that in just a minute, though. Anything that you're especially proud of in your term, a council term?
My council term? Well, there's so many things we've done good for the city in the last 4 years. I was trying to think of a list last night. I mean, the east side of Heber, we redid all the water, sewer, and pressurized irrigation over the last 3 years, which is part of that. We voted for it my first year in office. We have loans to do that at 0% interest, which was amazing at the time. So I'm really very proud of that. The airport, I was able to end the 8-year lawsuit, help settle that lawsuit. That's a big accomplishment, I would say. Smith's Marketplace. We were able to get that through the finish line. People don't remember this, but it was very contentious. It was a very heated item. And it's, I've seen people at that store that I didn't think I would see there because they had tried to fight it, right? But it is a great boost to our economy in Heber Valley. Heritage Farms Parkway was a great accomplishment, getting that road completed. The list just can go on and on, I believe.
Well, good for you. Okay. Well, any plans, do you think, to run for office again? Maybe not for council or mayor, but maybe county or statewide? Or
not right now. I really don't see myself as a politician. I don't. I got into this to serve the community. I've discovered that politics, the only difference between politics and professional life is the truth is optional. Really, I mean, people can just say whatever they want. And it's hard for me to work in that environment. I like to know the facts, act on the facts, and make good decisions on those.
All right, back to last night's meeting. The council has exceeded its 10 p.m. deadline quite often. Why?
Yeah.
Why not just have a smaller agenda or?
Well, we have a lot of people in the council that like to talk. And every single item, it seems like everybody talks and talks and talks. I think it could be much more concise. There's a lot of work that we do before the meetings. There are a lot of questions that can be answered before the meetings. They don't have to be brought up in that meeting. What's interesting is when you look at the listenership of those meetings, there's maybe 5 or 6 people in the room and maybe 10 people online. And if people are talking to be heard, there's nobody listening. I mean, it's very few people. So I believe it could be much more efficient. But we've had people like to talk, and that's, it's hard to stop that. But there is so much happening in Heber, we have to get the business done. I mean, they could switch it and do 4 meetings a month instead of 2 and split it up. I don't think anybody really wants to do that. Last night we voted at 10 to extend the meeting indefinitely because we did have some important issues to discuss still. So
does city staff get paid overtime for
they do
those
yes.
meetings?
Yeah, they do get paid overtime for those meetings. I do feel for them. They work very, very hard, very appreciative of what they do. But it is amazing how efficient we can be after 10 o'clock.
All right, council, as you mentioned, discussed that communication policy. You had placed the item on the agenda looking to create a policy. So what prompted that?
Well, there's been several instances over the last 4 years where the newsletter, for example, that is sent out has been used against people politically. It's not what that's for. That's to inform the public. And the instance I kept bringing up last night was in the last election 2 years ago when we did ranked choice voting, Mayor Franco wrote in her newsletter the exact wrong instructions of how to do it. She stated in the newsletter, you have to vote for every person, which isn't true. You can vote for two or three or four. So just to make sure that the information we're sending out is correct and actionable by the public.
Yeah, so how does that change? How does the current policy then change what has been happening?
We don't have a policy currently. That's our problem. There hasn't been a policy where the staff can stand up and say, hey, this isn't right. We don't want to send this out.
Okay. Councilmember Yvonne Barney had objected to the suggestion that the city attorney review the city newsletter before it goes out. Do you agree that that's a step too far?
I would say that it would only be in special circumstances if there's a question by the staff or the city manager. But it shows me that Councilmember Barney likes to see that used as a political platform. And I don't think that's what it should be. If I'm reading the newsletter as a citizen, I just want to get the facts.
All right. On the airport, the council amended the airport bylaws regarding who can serve on the airport board. So what was changed there?
That's just that OK3 Air is, at one point, we removed them from the board and then put them back on a few years ago as a consistent member of the advisory board. What they're asking is they don't just want one person named, but anyone from their management team could be able to attend that meeting.
Mm. So is there still more work to be done with the hangar leaseholders who are upset?
I think there's always work to be done. We still have not completely finalized the hangar lease. We are going to have in our next meeting, it's like a 101 session, a learning session of hangar leases and what the importance is to the airport. To give us a little more education to go before going in to make that decision. But the airport it's a hot topic in Heber and probably will continue to be. The one thing about the advisory board that's interesting is it's really a user and tenants board. Everyone on that board has a hangar or a plane or has a financial interest in the airport. So are they really bringing forward the best interest of the city when they're making their recommendations? That's a question. You know, are they saying, you know, these are recommendations based on the best interest of the city? I'd like to see some just standard citizens that aren't associated with the airport put on that board to have a different opinion.
Sure. There was some criticism of how the city handled that last week's special meeting over the airport since it was requested by the city manager rather than an elected official. Was that criticism warranted?
No, and it was clarified yesterday per state code that it's not that the city council members or the mayor have to call the meeting, but they do need to approve it being called. And that's how we've run every special meeting since I've been on the council, is the city manager or staff says, hey, we need to have a special meeting. Here's why. Can you be there? Or is it okay to do that? And yes. I don't know what the demand for who called the meeting was all about during the special meeting, because we were all there and present. So, yeah, I mean, if there's a special meeting because of potential litigation, that was the question, was it warranted to have a closed session? And if our attorney's saying, yes, there's potential litigation, then it warrants having a closed session.
All right, with regard to the New London development, the council looked at plans for a mixed-use development near Smith's Marketplace. What changes has the developer made based on the council's feedback from last meeting?
Well, they didn't make really any changes. It was more answering questions. We have to realize the New London development's already been approved, and they have their density. We're just trying to decide, are we going to offer CRA funds, Community Reinvestment Agency funds, to help them do something better than they could otherwise? Right now, they're willing to build 3 apartment buildings and pave the whole rest of it for parking and have a couple of retail pads. If we use CRA funds to build a parking structure, they can build a hotel, they can add more retail, they can have green space, more of a plaza gathering area. And that's really the question. Do we want to use the tax revenue that they're going to generate to help it be a better place for all of us, or do we want to just let them build what's already been approved with the apartment buildings and the parking lot?
Okay, so what's next for that? A decision needs to be made there.
Yeah, we made a decision last night for the CRA to support the developer going to the county and to the school district to ask for their participation as well, because we felt like it's the right thing to do. There was a 3-2 vote Sid, Mike, and I voted yes. Aaron and Yvonne voted no. But Aaron did have a lot of great questions that they did answer. And he said something to the effect of no vote doesn't mean I don't support this. So, okay. Politics, right?
I just have another, like, less than a minute. But the council did adopt a new impact fee plan.
Yes.
So how will those impact fees change under this new plan?
They're going to increase. You know, the cost of everything is increasing. The cost of our standard of living that we want to have is more expensive. So we are increasing our impact fees going forward.
Like how much? What are we talking about?
Almost double.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a big increase. Well, 50% really. Yeah. From like $4,500 to $6,700 per home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and we talk about affordability. You've just kind of shot it in the foot, no?
Yeah. That's the thing. If we want nice parks, if we want open space, if we want these things, it costs money to do that.
Okay. Scott, I got to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Scott Phillips, a member of the Heber City Council.